Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts. Here's Daniel's prompt.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So I'd like to ask you today a question about a Wi-Fi network, what you'd recommend that I look for. My wife and I rent our place. So like most renters, we have to be nice to kind of put down access points and Ethernet runs all over the, you know, to wherever we want to have our internet. But that's not really feasible. I picked up a TP-Link mesh network a few years ago when we moved in here, and it's definitely not the best. I want to start trying to start working around the house a bit more. I work from home most days a week, and I use my desktop workstation as, you know, as my main computer. It's about a gigabit down. The drop to where I'd like to be working at the kitchen table is all the way down to like 200 Mbps, and it's quite a significant slowdown. Also, in the latency, it just feels like a much more sluggish connection. I'm not a huge fan. I mean, TP-Link is fine, but I feel like there's a point where you outgrow it. We have in our home a few wireless IP cameras for baby monitoring, and I also got into smart home in this property because it came with some Wi-Fi switches. So they're all running on 2.4. is about 5 or 6 different switches. We've got the other stuff. And to top it all off, I use Zigbee for my home automation stuff. So the TP-Link mesh that I have, you can't set up like multiple networks. The only way for me to have a dedicated 2.4 band is to create a guest network, which is kind of a very hacky solution. So probably what I'm looking for, I guess, is a decent mesh network that supports the more modern Wi-Fi standards. I know we're past Wi-Fi, you know, Wi-Fi 5 already. Supports, ideally, I would say, probably, you know, setting up at least a couple of SSIDs, maybe VLAN for IoT devices. So just kind of a bit more robust. But most importantly, I feel like if we're going to be, you know, at some point going over to APs, it would be worth getting something that would, like, you know, be good enough for a few years. That's the concern with Wi-Fi, is that everything moves so quickly that you'll have something, it'll only be good for a couple of years. So what would you recommend in terms of the systems on the market today? Do you think that it's possible to get a mesh system that might actually just be your long-term thing, or will access points always be preferred for a good connection? And in terms of manufacturers, products, and price points, what do you think I should be kind of expecting and looking for?
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. We are coming to you from our usual spot here in Jerusalem, and I have to say, the energy in the house is a little high today.
That might be because our housemate Daniel has been pacing the hallway muttering about signal interference and packet loss for the last 48 hours.
Exactly. I am Korn, and joined as always by my brother, the man who probably knows more about network protocols than is strictly healthy for a social life. Herman Poppleberry.
Herman Poppleberry at your service, and yes, I am ready to dive into this one. Daniel sent us a voice memo that I think is going to resonate with a lot of people, especially those who are renting and cannot exactly start tearing open walls to run Category 6 Ethernet cables everywhere.
It is the classic modern dilemma. You pay for a gigabit connection, you get the fancy router, and then you sit down at your kitchen table to actually work, and suddenly you are back in the era of dial-up speeds. Well, maybe not quite that bad, but Daniel mentioned a drop from a gigabit down to 200 megabits per second. That is a massive loss of performance.
It really is. And for Daniel, it is not just about browsing the web. He's dealing with multiple Internet of Things devices, IP cameras for baby monitoring, smart switches on the 2.4 GHz band, and he's trying to manage them all on a consumer mesh system that just is not cutting it anymore.
Right, he is using a TP-Link system right now, and while those are great entry-level kits, he has clearly hit the ceiling of what they can do. He is looking for multiple SSIDs, VLAN support for his smart home stuff, and a way to future-proof his setup in this brave new world of 2026.
There is a lot to unpack there. We are talking about the difference between consumer-grade mesh and what we call prosumer gear. We are talking about the physics of wireless backhaul, and the big question of whether mesh can ever truly compete with a hardwired access point.
So, let us start with the immediate problem. Why is he seeing that huge drop-off in speed? 200 megabits per second is only 20% of his total bandwidths. Where is the other 80% going?
This is the fundamental trade-off of most mesh systems. In a standard mesh setup, your nodes are talking to each other wirelessly. This is called the backhaul. If your mesh system only has two bands, let us say one 2.4 GHz band and one 5 GHz band, the router has to use that same 5 GHz band to both talk to your laptop and talk to the other mesh nodes.
So it is like a bucket brigade, where the person in the middle has to stop, turn around, hand the bucket back, and then turn back to receive the next one?
Precisely. It effectively halves your maximum theoretical throughput right off the bat because the radio cannot transmit and receive at the same time on the same frequency. Now, better systems use a dedicated third band, a tri-band system, specifically for that backhaul communication. But even then, you are dealing with environmental interference. Walls, mirrors, microwave ovens, even your neighbor's Wi-Fi can chew into that signal.
And Daniel mentioned he has a lot of IoT devices. Those are mostly on the 2.4 GHz band, right?
Yes, almost exclusively, and that band is incredibly crowded. It only has three non-overlapping channels. If you have five IP cameras streaming high-definition video, and a dozen smart switches all fighting for airtime on those three channels, your latency is going to spike. Daniel mentioned the connection feels sluggish, and that is often a latency issue rather than a raw speed issue.
So, if he is looking to upgrade and wants to stay in the mesh world because he cannot run wires in a rental, what is the state of the art here in early 2026?
We have moved firmly into the era of Wi-Fi 7. If Daniel wants to future-proof, he should not be looking at Wi-Fi 6 or even 6E anymore. Wi-Fi 7, or 802.11b, is the new gold standard. The big jump there is something called multi-link operation, or MLO.
I remember we touched on this briefly a few episodes ago, but how does MLO change the game for a mesh system specifically?
It is huge for mesh. Traditionally, a device connects to one band at a time. With MLO, a Wi-Fi 7 mesh node can use multiple bands simultaneously to talk to the main router. It can aggregate the 5 GHz and the 6 GHz bands into one massive pipe for the backhaul. This significantly reduces latency because if one band is busy or experiencing a spike in interference, the data just flows through the other one instantly.
That sounds like exactly what he needs for a reliable connection, but he also mentioned a very specific requirement, multiple SSIDs and VLANs. For those who do not know, a VLAN is a virtual local area network. It lets you isolate your sketchy smart light bulbs from your main computer where you do your banking. Most consumer mesh systems, like the TP-Link Deco series Daniel is using, do not really allow for this, do they?
Most do not. They might give you a guest network, which is a very basic form of isolation, but that is usually it. If you want true VLAN tagging where you can say, "This camera can talk to the internet, but not to my NAS," you have to step up to prosumer gear.
Which brings us to manufacturers. Who should he be looking at?
If he wants to stay in the mesh ecosystem but get professional features, I think ASUS is one of the strongest contenders right now with their Zen Wi-Fi Pro series. Specifically, something like the Zen Wi-Fi Pro ET12 or the newer Wi-Fi 7 models. ASUS is unique because their consumer-facing software actually includes a lot of advanced networking features that other brands hide. You can set up multiple SSIDs and map them to different subnets relatively easily.
What about Ubiquiti? I know you are a big fan of the UniFi ecosystem. We talked about their gateway strategies back in episode 38. Can you do a mesh setup with UniFi without running wires?
You absolutely can, and it is probably the most robust way to do it, though it requires a bit more setup. You could get a Unify Cloud Gateway Ultra or the newer Max version as your primary router, and then use their U7 Pro access points. Unify access points have a feature called Wireless Uplink. You just plug the secondary access points into power, and they will find the main one and form a mesh.
An advantage there is the software, right?
Exactly. Unify is built for this. You can create 10 different SSIDs if you want. You can put your cameras on a separate VLAN, limit their bandwidth, and even set up a firewall rule that prevents them from phoning home to servers in other countries. It gives you total control. The downside is that Unify access points are designed to be ceiling mounted for the best signal, which might be tricky in a rental.
Although, you can get creative with 3M command strips, or just placing them on top of a bookshelf.
True. Now, if Daniel wants something that is a bit more plug-and-play, but still high-end, he should look at the Netgear Orbi Wi-Fi 7 systems. The Orbi 970 series is incredibly powerful. It has a dedicated 10 gigabit backhaul, but, and this is a big but, the price point is eye-watering.
How eye-watering are we talking?
For a 3-node Wi-Fi 7 Orbi system, you're looking at somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000. It is professional-grade hardware at a professional-grade price.
Wow! That is a lot of money to fix a kitchen table dead zone. What about the ASUS or Ubiquiti options?
The ASUS Zen Wi-Fi Pro systems usually run between $600 and $800 for a 2-pack. Ubiquiti is actually surprisingly affordable if you piece it together. A gateway and two U7 Pro access points would probably set you back around $600.
That seems much more reasonable for a home office setup. But let us talk about the long run part of Daniel's question. He asked if access points are always preferred over mesh systems. If he eventually moves into a house he owns, should he ditch the mesh?
In a heartbeat. Look, mesh is a brilliant solution for when you have no other choice. It is a workaround for the laws of physics. But a wired backhaul connecting your access points with an actual Ethernet cable will always, always be superior.
Why is that? Is it just the raw speed?
It is the consistency. A wire has zero interference. It has near zero latency. When you wire your access points, you free up 100% of your wireless spectrum to talk to your devices. You are no longer using your precious Wi-Fi airtime just to move data between the nodes themselves.
So even if he buys a high-end mesh system now, he should make sure it has Ethernet ports on the back so he can wire it up later?
Absolutely. Any prosumer mesh node will have at least a 2.5 gigabit or even a 10 gigabit Ethernet port. My advice to Daniel would be, buy for the mesh capability you need today, but ensure the hardware supports a wired backhaul for tomorrow.
That makes total sense. Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of how to actually set up those VLANs and handle the Zigbee interference he mentioned, let us take a quick break for our sponsors.
Are you tired of your neighbor's Wi-Fi stealing your precious airwaves? Do you feel like your digital privacy is leaking out through your window panes? Introducing the Signal Shield Faraday Curtain. Made from a proprietary blend of lead-infused polyester and recycled space blankets, the Signal Shield doesn't just block sunlight, it blocks everything. From cellular signals to radio waves to the very thoughts of the people passing by your house, it is heavy. It is slightly radio cold. York Newt's Dumoigadit. But you get it, huh?
Alright, thanks, Larry. I am not sure lead-infused curtains are the solution Daniel is looking for, especially if he wants his Wi-Fi to actually work inside the house.
Yeah, I think Larry might be getting his product ideas from old spy novels again. Anyway, back to the real world. Daniel mentioned another interesting detail in his prompt. He is using Zigbee for his home automation.
Right, and he is worried about how that interacts with his Wi-Fi. For those who aren't familiar, Zigbee is a low-power mesh protocol used by things like Philips Hue bulbs or IKEA smart sensors. And it shares the same frequency range as Wi-Fi, right?
It does. It lives right in that crowded 2.4 GHz band. This is a huge source of invisible lag. If your Wi-Fi router is blasting on channel 6 and your Zigbee hub is also trying to use channel 6, they are going to scream over each other.
So how do you fix that? Can you just change the channel?
You have to be strategic. Wi-Fi channels 1, 6, and 11 are the only ones that do not overlap in the 2.4 GHz spectrum. Zigbee channels are narrower. Usually, if you set your Wi-Fi to channel 1, you should set your Zigbee to channel 20 or 25 to keep them as far apart as possible.
That is a great practical tip. But Daniel also mentioned the IP cameras. High-definition video streaming over Wi-Fi is a lot of data. If he has multiple cameras, is that what is killing his kitchen table speeds?
It is definitely contributing. Video is a continuous stream. It does not burst like a web page. It just constantly occupies the airwaves. This is why the VLAN suggestion is so important. By putting those cameras on their own virtual network, he can manage the traffic better. But more importantly, if he gets a Wi-Fi 7 system, he can put his laptop on the 6 GHz band, which is completely empty and far away from the 2.4 GHz noise of the cameras at a Franin's ear.
It is like moving from a crowded city street to a private highway.
Exactly. The 6 GHz band introduced with Wi-Fi 6E and expanded with Wi-Fi 7 is really the secret sauce for anyone living in a crowded apartment building or a rental with lots of neighbors. It does not penetrate walls as well as the lower frequencies, but in a mesh setup where you have nodes in different rooms, that is actually an advantage because it reduces interference from the neighbors.
So, let us talk about the specific recommendation for Daniel's rental-friendly setup. If you were in his shoes living in that house here in Jerusalem, what would you actually go out and buy this afternoon?
If I wanted the best balance of power and ease of use, I would go with the ASUS NWi-Fi Pro ET12 or the newer Wi-Fi 7 version, the BE30000. It is a two-node system. I would put one in the living room by the fiber entry point, and one halfway between the living room and that kitchen table.
Why ASUS over the Ubiquiti setup you mentioned?
For a rental, the ASUS Dome nodes are designed to sit on a shelf. They look like little futuristic towers. They have excellent internal antennas. And most importantly, BeIMish software is very good at handling wireless backhaul. It will automatically use the 6 GHz band to connect the two nodes, leaving the 5 GHz bands free for his devices.
And what about his VLAN requirement? Can the ASUS handle that?
It can. ASUS has a feature called Guest Network Pro on their newer models. It allows you to create multiple software-defined networks. You can create one for work on the 5 and 6 GHz bands, one for IoT on 2.4 GHz only, and one for cameras. You can even set it up so the IoT network is isolated from the rest. It is not quite as granular as a full UniFi setup, but for 99% of users, it is more than enough.
And price-wise, he is looking at, what, $700 or $800?
Around that? It is an investment, but if you are working from home and your productivity is being tapped by your network, it pays for itself in avoided frustration within a month.
I totally agree. There is nothing worse than being on a Zoom call and having your video freeze, right as you are trying to make a point. Now, what about the future-proof aspect? We are in 2026. Is Wi-Fi 7 going to last him the next 5 years?
Yes. Wi-Fi 7 is a massive leap. It supports 320 MHz channels, which is double the width of Wi-Fi 6. It has 4096 cam, which basically means it can pack more data into every radio signal. We are looking at theoretical speeds of up to 46 gigabits per second. Even if he only gets 10% of that in the real world, it is still faster than most wired connections today.
So, even if he gets a 2 gigabit or 5 gigabit fiber connection in a few years, this hardware will handle it?
Easily. The bottleneck will be the internet service provider, not his home network.
That is a comforting thought. Now I want to go back to the no wires constraint. Daniel mentioned he cannot run cables. But are there any other stealth ways to get a wired backhaul in a rental? What about those powerline adapters or MoCA?
I am glad you brought that up. MoCA, which stands for Multimedia Over Coax Alliance, is the sleeper hit of home networking. Most rentals, even older ones here in Jerusalem, have coaxial cable jacks for TV in almost every room.
Right, the old yes or hot cables.
Exactly. You can get a pair of Moke 2.5 adapters. You plug one into the coax jack near your router and one into the coax jack in your office. It turns your home's existing TV wiring into a high-speed Ethernet network. It is incredibly stable, much better than Powerline, and it gives you that wired backhaul without drilling a single hole.
That sounds like a game changer for a renter. If Daniel has those jacks, he could use them to connect his mesh nodes together?
Yes. If he uses Mocha to connect the living room node to the kitchen node, he suddenly has a wired mesh. His speeds would jump back up to near gigabit levels instantly because the wireless spectrum would be completely free for his devices.
So the advice is, first, check if you have coax jacks. If you do, buy Moke adapters. If you don't, or if the wiring is too old, go for the high-end Wi-Fi 7 mesh, like the Asus Zen Wi-Fi.
That is the perfect hierarchy of solutions.
And what about the smart home devices? He mentioned he has a lot of them. Any tips for managing 20 plus devices on a mesh system?
The biggest thing is to stop using the Smart Connect feature that combines 2.4 and 5 GHz into one SSID. Most people think it is convenient, but for smart home devices, it is a nightmare. They often get stuck trying to connect to the 5 GHz band when they only support 2.4 and then they drop offline.
I have seen that happen with our own light bulbs. They just start blinking for no reason.
Exactly. Create a dedicated 2.4 GHz SSID just for the dumb smart devices. Keep your phones, laptops, and tablets on a separate 5 or 6 GHz SSID. This reduces the handshake overhead on the main network and keeps everything much more stable.
That is such a simple fix, but I bet most people don't do it.
They don't because the setup wizards encourage the one name for everything approach. But for a weird prompt listener who wants a robust network, splitting the bands is step one.
All right, we have covered a lot of ground. We have talked about the physics of mesh backhaul, the benefits of Wi-Fi 7 and MLO, the prosumer options from Asus and Ubiquiti, and the stealth wiring potential of MoCA.
And don't forget the Zigi channel management. That is the pro tip that saves you from those mysterious lag spikes.
Right, so looking ahead, where is this all going? We are in 2026. Do you think we will eventually reach a point where mesh is so good that wiring a house becomes obsolete?
I think we are getting close for general consumer use. But for people like us, and for people like Daniel who are pushing the limits with cameras and high bandwidth work, wires will always be king. There is a certain peace of mind that comes with a physical connection that radio waves can never quite match. Radio is shared. Wire is yours.
That is a very poetic way of putting it, Herman. Radio is a conversation in a crowded room. A wire is a private phone call.
Exactly.
Well, I think we have given Daniel plenty to chew on. Hopefully this helps him get that kitchen table connection back up to speed so he can stop pacing the hallway.
And maybe he can finally get those baby monitors to stop lagging. There is nothing more stressful than a frozen video feed of a sleeping baby.
No kidding. Well, this has been a great deep dive. If you are listening and you have your own weird prompt about networking, or anything else for that matter, you can head over to myweirdprompts.com and use the contact form there.
Or if you want to be like Daniel, you can send us a voice memo. We love hearing your voices and the specific details of the problems you are trying to solve.
And hey, if you've been enjoying the show and you have been with us for a while, maybe since those early episodes about firewalls and OPN sensor, we would really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find us.
It really does. We see every review and it keeps us motivated to keep digging into these rabbit holes.
Alright, I think that is a wrap for episode 258. Thanks to our housemate Daniel for the prompt, even if his networking woes kept us up a bit last night.
It was worth it for the intellectual exchange, Corn. Always is.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at myweirdprompts.com. We will see you next week.
Until next time, keep your firmware updated and your channels non-overlapping.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.